in, everybody, to this week's Five Aside, the show where we go over five topics aside from the most recent Five Stripes match. My name is Glenn Pizon, and tonight we have a woman joining us who has never met an Atlanta United event that she has not gone to. I promise you, it is Angel Whitworth pulling double duty tonight, filling in for Jennifer and Kristen. Hi, Angel.
Hey, everybody. Now, I haven't been to everything, but
You've been to everything. No. You were at the event on Tuesday. I have never been to an event that I have not also seen you at. Not one.
I'm a supporter, man. What can I tell you?
A supporter is putting it mildly. The amount of
work. Hey, I don't have a life, okay? I just don't have a life.
That's the way to put it. We have no lives, so we give our lives to people kicking around a ball. But it's cool, and I love that everything that you do for the club and how much love you put into it, and you do everything. I think you lead with love and energy, and it's awesome how much you give. Plus, like I said, I still have a tremendous amount of respect for how much your back really is to a goal every week. I don't know how you don't just turn around and watch the match, and you're up there.
We get it.
But I would make a terrible capo. Just want to say that right now. Do not ever even think of trying to make me a capo. I can't take my eyes off the game. But
that's
anyhow,
the good thing about Apple Plus is we can come straight home and rewatch it.
Yeah, that's a much needed improvement this year. It's so nice to be able to go home and just. You don't have to get on Bally Sports. You don't have to have DVR'd it, look for some pirated stream or what have you. You can just get on Apple. Just get on Apple and just watch it. I do wish that they would
not like, show the scores.
Yeah. You know, if you miss the match and you don't have a friend or a partner at home that's willing to, take the hit and know the score and get it set up for you in advance, it would be nice if somehow they just gave that option.
But for a while.
I mean, it's still way better than what it was.
Yeah, for
way
sure.
better than what it was. All right. So, first up tonight, let's get the relatively sad stuff out of the way, even though we want it to be more of a recognition, a celebration of a person that we've lost. We've lost a lot of great people, unfortunately, over the years. It feels like since 2020, maybe we're just more sensitive to it. Losing, you know, monumentally important people on a global, national, and local level. It just feels like it's been piling on. But unfortunately, we lost another one.
Yeah.
Another ATL-ian, a native, someone who's massively important to the culture here and the music.
Yeah. We lost Rico Wade this past week, very suddenly, apparently. And for those people that don't know who Rico Wade is, we were in the supporter section and we had a banner made for him. Shout out to Terry from Footy Mob that really very quickly put that banner together for the supporter section. We had a banner and people were like, "Who's Rico?" And they were like younger people. And I was like,
Bless your hearts. No idea.
Bless your hearts. Yeah. But for those that don't know, Rico Wade and Organized Noise were really responsible for kind of the Atlanta sound that we now refer to as the Atlanta sound. You know, it's Outkast, Goody Mob, TLC.
When all that was going down in the 90s.
All of that, Nick, you know, working with the Dungeon Family. And it was just...
Yep.
He was the, you know, Organized Noise and with Ray and Sleepy Brown, they just formed this whole sound and really did a lot. It was different.
It was new. It was ushering in a new time and putting Atlanta on the map.
Yeah.
As it were.
And if you didn't just take it for granted about this, when people say that's Atlanta, it's like, it's Atlanta because that they made
it's Atlanta because of that. You're right. We do take it for granted.
It was strategic. You know, it was like,
It didn't just happen.
No, they wanted to find a way to reinvent.
All these groups didn't just like pop up and suddenly just have hits. Like,
yeah. I mean, they wanted to reinvent how genres could work together.
And I
regional sounds different from one another. So
I think they knew at the time that they were reinventing.
Yeah.
You know, there's not always, you don't always know it in the moment when you're creating what it's going to be, how important it's going to be. I think they knew.
Yeah.
I think they knew.
So all you kids listening out there, we lost a legend. Look him up.
It was a really beautiful moment. Especially with Killer Mike being there and hitting the spike.
Yeah.
And then,
you know, I
saw the club posted a photo, with you holding the banner. With
yeah, Mike. That was, they had told me beforehand that they wanted to have Mike take a picture with the banner. And so I took it down and I was holding it. And then I thought I was just handing it to Mike, and then they took this picture. So, which was cool. But again, shout out to Terry. She's the one that made that banner. So I want to give her all the credit there. But I just happened to be the person that was standing there holding it with him. But he was very touched when he came down from hitting the spike and he saw it. He like put his hand over his heart and was like, thank you, thank you. And then another really great thing was Rico's family reached out and really would like the banner. So we are giving the banner to Rico's family. So that was very, very cool. Right, and that was while we're still on the stage. Marissa got the note. So very cool.
Keeping the crying streak alive and well on this show. Here we go. All right. It was beautiful, and it should be a celebration, and we should not take people like him, people in your lives, whoever means the most to you. It can be just a personal thing. It can be to an entire city, state, country, the world. Try to be present in the moment. Try not to take these people and the time we have with them for granted, because
tomorrow is not promised, as they say.
No, it's not. All right, moving on to number two with some bullshit of the same old bullshit variety of women having to band together, strengthen numbers to stand up against abuse, sexual harassment, bullying, you know, the same old story again and again and again. And here we are again, this time in Brazil with Santos and Corinthians. So last week, a match was played between the two clubs, Corinthians and Santos. And the Corinthian players staged a protest at the start of the match during the Brazilian national anthem. They all covered their ears and mouths to protest the rehiring of Santos coach Clayton Lima. I'm horrible with my Portuguese. You know, not that this man deserves to have his name pronounced and shown any sort of respect, since he clearly didn't show it to his players from Santos. Anyhow, what has happened here? Last year, around September, October, 19 players, say it one more time, 19.
Not one.
Not one, not two. The whole starting 11, and then some, submitted anonymous letters. You know, it's hard to be anonymous at that point when everybody's doing it. But, you know, these are the things that female athletes have to go through, right? Of it's hard to come out publicly, showing your face, you know, speaking out against stuff like this for fear of repercussions. Even in this day of, you know, the Me Too movement, and women empowerment and feeling stronger and coming out, you know, and kind of finally, you know, some of this shit being dealt with, they still have to do this, right? Like, it's still a risk.
Look at what happened with women's gymnastics. Look how long that
for real, right? Like, how long has this shit been simmering? And
how many plaintiffs are there? Like 50, 60? I don't know. I can't remember, but a lot. Too many.
It's way too many. I get worked up about this stuff because, like, I'm a male and this just speaks poorly on us. Like, we got to do better as men. We have to do better here. And this guy clearly has not. So he was dismissed. Well, he says he resigned last fall, and he asked the club, Santos, to carry out an investigation during a press conference last week after the match between Corinthians and Santos, he said those frivolous letters, the 19 letters, one more time, 19 letters, never applied to me. I left the club to wait for Santos to carry out their investigation. There is no formal accusation against me in court. Truth there. There was no court.
There might not be any formal accusations against him in court, but when if it's one person, then you can have a he said, she said. When it's 19 people submitting letters, then there's a real problem.
Hell yes. And for me, it's a bit of a cop-out for him to say, well, it didn't go to court. Gee, right. Why not? I don't know why women don't feel comfortable going through the legal system.
Sure.
It's not like it's failed them in the past.
Right.
Come on, man. Like, miss me with that crap. Anyhow, the club conducted their investigation and found no evidence, they said, backing this up, right? So they rehired him. Poor decision, in my opinion. Really poor decision. And that's where this protest occurred last week, because of that rehiring. So now, not only in this whole saga, not only do you have those 19 players from Santos submitting these letters last year, right? And that, well, initially it sounded like they were heard, and obviously not, because they rehired him. Now you have another team, the opposing team.
Right.
Their opposition, the team they are trying to beat, standing up for them. Everybody in solidarity. What more do you need?
Right.
Are you serious right now? This guy, he's 49 years old. He's been coaching a long time. 25 years he's been coaching. This is his third stint with Santos. So you got to wonder, how pervasive is this? How has their culture permitted this until it got
exactly
to the point?
Right. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the culture there. It's these men thinking that this is okay. That this is just, it's just boys being boys. It's just,
to borrow phrase from it's Trump, it's, locker it's room talk.
Locker room talk. It's all of that. And it's been going on for so long that it's perceived as normal, right? And I'm so happy to see these women now being brave enough to be like, hell no, it's not okay.
It takes
not okay.
So much courage, so much guts to try to change culture.
Yeah.
And which is what they're trying to do here. I mean, I'm sure we'll learn more about this in the coming months, about other instances. I don't think this was a singular instance that set 19 players off last fall, where he said something, some sort of remark. No, I fully believe we will hear former players. This guy's been coaching for a long time. I'm sure we'll hear players speak up that were at other clubs. It would shock me if this was a one-off incident with this guy, right?
Yeah. And I don't even know, but I can just hear it now. I bet you cash money that there were guys behind the scenes going, oh, so these women are overreacting. It's not a big deal. Just like the Spain with the World Cup, right?
100%.
You know what I mean? They're just overreacting.
Too sensitive. It's just boys being boys.
You might think that, but let me tell you, they don't think that. This is a very real problem. And so I'm glad that dude is out.
Yeah, he resigned. Turns out those letters, those frivolous letters, not so frivolous.
But let's see where he ends up. Let's see if anyone else hires him.
Yeah.
Please. That'll be the real test of things.
I'm begging you, clubs of the world, stay away from this guy. Why do you even want that baggage? Why?
Right.
Why would you subject your players?
If he comes on now, it's just going to be a distraction. So,
in a statement, Santos said after he resigned, to protect his family integrity, LOL, and Santos FC, Clayton Lima has submitted his resignation and they accepted it. They also said that he's been a target of criticism and even death threats. Okay, criticism, that's what it is. A little bit more than that. The death threats part, if true, don't know. Yeah. Obviously not. Like, it can't go that far. for anything, for any reason, right. You know, but, and I don't mean this to sound like I'm condoning that type of response, if true, but the club did bring this situation on themselves. This is an own goal.
Yeah.
You brought him back. 19 letters, 19 players got together and said, we have to do this. It's bad enough that we have to get in the public eye about this. It's not easy. It's not fun. It's a risk for them. These players don't make diddly as is.
Right.
They need these jobs. They're thinking about their careers, their future careers. They still have to weigh all this stuff. Oh, am I going to be viewed as someone who rocks the boat?
That's right. Are they a quote, troublemaker?
Troublemaker.
You know.
Yeah, good trouble. Yeah. Hell yeah. But it's not easy for them to do. So good on them.
Yeah.
I'm 100%. Sorry that they have to, women across the globe, across leagues, across sports, have to keep assuming this rule, doing the heavy lifting to change amateur and toxic behavior from my male counterparts. It's embarrassing. It's frustrating. We got to keep supporting these women, believing them, believing in them, and get this crap out of the game and society at large. It's well past time, and anybody who is unwilling to, that gets upset that, oh, well, we can't do this anymore. We can't just speak like this anymore.
It's these woke females. Get the fuck out of here.
Listen, it's wrong now. It was wrong then. We're just more attuned to it now and paying attention to it.
Right.
It's not like
we're not listening to grandpa anymore. That's correct. Making these stupid,
you know what?
Jokes.
There was a lot of shit decades ago, centuries ago, that was wrong.
Sure.
That we don't do anymore.
You learn and you move forward.
You
learn
and you change and you grow and you become better. That's all we're asking for here. To just be better people, be better to each other.
Take no one's five above anyone else. Think before you open your mouth or send a, you know, or do something.
And don't think because you have a certain amount of clout, because your resume is X pages long, that you're above it all, that you're protected, that you are immune to this and you can just behave however you want because you're untouchable. Those days are gone, as well as they should be. And hopefully we get to a point in the near future where this just isn't an issue and women can go out, play the game they love without having to deal with this and all the risks that come with taking this kind of stand. I hope. That's the hope.
Shout out to all the ladies that keep on moving and keep on standing up for themselves.
You bet. Alrighty, now we will move on to a little discussion about the WNBA draft with Mr. Jack Purdy, who was not able to join us tonight. He had a previous engagement with Survivor. big Survivor fan, but he was kind enough to give us some time last night. So here is that conversation with Jack. Alrighty, Jack, thank you for giving up your one night of the week where there isn't some major sporting event or Survivor happening. That I know it doesn't happen. There's only usually one day of the week where at least one of those things.
You know what tonight is? It's Shogun night. Tonight's Shogun night.
Actually, I've heard Shogun is really good. I haven't started it yet. I'm trying to blast my way through Peacemaker. Season one, currently getting prepared for season two, which I might end up working on. We'll see. That could be kind of cool. But anyhow, thank you for taking some time out tonight to talk a little WNBA and Caitlin Clark and what's going on there and the massive salary she is now pulling down. Correct.
Yeah, no. As I saw on Twitter, she'll be making about what an accountant one would make at a general
slightly
company.
Over the minimum senior roster if you want to put it into MLS yes. terms per year.
Well, I do. I'm glad you bring this up. There's a big point. There's a big point of clarification here is that because there is no limits to how much NIL you can make in college right now. It's still the Wild West in that regard. So a lot of people are thinking, hey, why would you just not stay at Iowa for another year and bank those checks? Here's the thing. Basically, she's going to be able to trade having to be a full-time student along with being a full-time athlete and can get rid of the school part and still be a full-time athlete and be Caitlin Clark, which in itself is an extremely valuable thing to be right now.
To be Caitlin Clark, you think?
Yeah, so yeah. I totally understand where initially people may think that in the long run, it's going to be being able to not have to do school for another year and be able to do other things that can make her a boatload of money outside of her actual salary from the WNBA, which they know is not great. It's not great. And the commissioner knows, as one example, she noted we're trying to get more charter flights done this year. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, we couldn't do it beforehand because the league was trying to survive. Yeah. But they have absolutely turned the corner. And last night was one of the most important nights in the league's history because it was a point where they showed the league is now thriving and the talent matches that and it can bring it forward. So, yeah, I'm really excited to just kind of explain why this draft was so important and these people were so important beyond just Caitlin. Right. Let me start here. Do you know who was drafted first in the 2003 NBA draft?
Oh, God, I knew it was going to be trivia night. 2003.
And if it helps, this person is playing basketball on an NBA floor right now.
Was it LeBron?
It was LeBron James. It was LeBron
straight
James.
Out of Akron U.
Straight out of Akron. I'll read you the other names on this list in the top six or top five. Darko Milicic, then All-Star. Carmelo Anthony. Okay. Chris Bosh. Dwayne Wade. I just named you four Hall of Famers right there.
Out of the 2003 draft.
That were drafted top five in the 2003 draft. Other names on this list: David West, the guy who makes the worst takes on TV right now, Kendrick Perkins, Leandro Barbosa. I don't know why that name stuck out to me, but it did. Josh Howard was an All-Star. Mo Williams and Atlanta Hawks. Oh, name this Atlanta Hawks legend. See if you got a shot here. An 03, the 51st pick of the 2003 draft.
Neek was already playing.
Oh yeah, Leek was basically done by this point.
03 draft.
And here's the thing, this guy was not really terribly relevant for the Hawks until about 2014-15. So it was later in his career.
I don't know.
Kyle Korver. Yeah. I should have said currently employed by the Hawks.
True. So,
Kyle Korver. Another Hawk, who is it? Kirk Heinrich, mainly a Bull, but Kirk Heinrich, also a Hawk for a hot sec, also in this draft. Which is to say, in a year, this year, where the NBA draft is basically worthless, this one was insanely good and very much set the path of the league after that. Like, it was Dwayne's league, it was LeBron's league, it was Melo's league. Eventually, Kyle became the best three-point shooter in Atlanta Hawks history.
Okay.
It's just up and down. There was just guys all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you would think it was just LeBron. Like, everyone knew it was LeBron's draft. Like, there was no kidding what this draft was about. We're talking about a very similar situation here with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, a generational talent that the likes of haven't been seen before, or at least haven't been seen in a couple decades. On the women's game, probably maybe hasn't really been seen at this level.
Ever.
And that's disrespect. Like, this is different. And she's in a different time period, too, with access to the game, eyeballs on it, like, ever-present everywhere you go, you're looking at screens.
Go watch her SNL skit from this weekend where she absolutely lambasted Michael Che. She mentions, like, who the four mothers were to getting her to where she is. And those are all the, like, if you want to go find highlights, those are the people. Go watch them. To my assertion, there's about six different people that could have been drafted number one overall any other year in this draft. Similar to that 2003 draft, Melo totally could have been number one. Bosh, Georgia Tech guy, absolutely could have been. They came out as freshmen. Mm-hmm. Cameron Brink, number two, Steph Curry's god sister, like that girl is insane. I don't know. It's like she was gonna be. She would have been far and away number one if Kayla wasn't there. Camila Cardoso, who was 6'7" and basically brought South Carolina to the title, also could have been number one any given year. Rekia Jackson, Aaliyah Edwards for UConn, who was just a stud with Paige Beckers, could have been number one. Angel Reese went 7.
Yep.
Give her a different year, would have been top three.
She went to Chicago.
She went to Chicago. Sky. Yeah. And the great narrative here is Camila Cardoso and Angel Reese, who just battled and battled and battled in SEC games, now are teammates in Chicago. Which is like you get that fun wrinkle in the WNBA because there's only so many teams right now. There will be a San Francisco-based team next year that the Warriors ownership owns.
Okay,
so they're going to expand to 13 next year, and they're getting more than
13 teams.
But 13 teams in 2025, yeah. But then to kind of carry this parallel even further, I mentioned David West and Josh Howard and Kyle Korver for a reason because there's other names later on in this draft that are like not nobodies that were setting records. That just got shoved so far back because there's so many good players. De'Aisha Fair played for Syracuse, top five all time in women's and D1 scoring. In the same year Caitlin was putting up all the records, there was another girl right there doing top 10 stuff, all time scoring. Elizabeth Kitley played for Virginia Tech.
Yep.
It was anytime I saw Georgia Tech play them, it was like, well, we're going to lose tonight because you couldn't stop her. She would average, I think she would score 30 on you without trying. Which is really hard to do in women's basketball. Just score without trying. That's what she did. And then Kate Martin, who was the other shooting guard at Iowa with Caitlin, also got drafted in here. And so and then round three's got, I don't recognize many of the names in round three.
If you are one of those names that's been bumped a little further down the list because of Caitlin.
Yeah.
And others. Are you wishing she would have stayed? You know, or how are you feeling about this? And then if you're a year behind and you're looking at next year, are you breathing a sigh of relief? Or are they riding this wave too? I mean, the tension is there. I wonder how they feel.
It's absolutely a ride the wave kind of thing. Okay. This was the most watched WNBA draft since the Diana Taurasi one in 2004. So, you know, not far off, like same era as that 2003 one. There were 601,000 people that watched the Taurasi draft. 2.45 million people watched this draft.
2.5 million?
Yeah, 2.5 million. So, you know, whatever X that is 20 years later.
That's incredible. Considering the national championship was like 19 million somewhere.
Yeah, 18 million watched that.
And now you got 2.5 just watching a draft.
A draft where everyone knew what was going to happen.
Right.
And these girls start playing games next month in the W.
Hmm.
So there is basically no layout. Like, we're going to get professional Caitlin Clark games literally in a month for Indiana. And she's playing with last year's number one pick, Aaliyah Boston, who was... basically Camila Cardoso. She was Camila Cardoso at South Carolina before Camila Cardoso. All this to say, I've said so many names, and apologies if you're not familiar with any of this. It is still a pretty, the WNBA for all intents and purposes is still a pretty niche league.
It is. But it is
by far the best it's ever been. And we all saw that the women's tournament was far more popular than the men's last year. And a lot of those characters are now in the W. Like, the story did not have, it was, I love how this whole batch went together. I think is to carry that point of what you were asking, like, would they have wanted to stay or go? They kind of get to do this as a unit.
So is this a sugar high? Or is college ball going to be able to continue because she's not there?
Yes.
How do you parlay this now into continued success? And the same thing with the league, how do they then capitalize on this?
I totally get your point. There is so much talent below them that's already in college.
And the hope is then that people take notice and go, oh, there's other stuff. There's other stuff going on here. There's other players, like, you know, you get hooked and you're like, the quality's pretty good. Same thing with the women's game in soccer. Yeah. You get a little notice and you're like, hey, shit, they actually play some pretty good ball here. They don't roll around on the pitch.
Nope. There's more. Yeah, there's more coming. There's absolutely more coming. I mentioned Paige Beckers before. She's still playing at UConn next year. Like, we get one more Paige Beckers year. Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame is not a human being I want to ever see Georgia Tech play basketball against, but they have to at least once a year, and it's really scary that we have to do that. It's everywhere. The talent pool is so much better than it used to be, and they have to stay. They don't just get to just one and done this. So you get the repeat characters. You get to watch them develop in good games. Now, unlike NBA guys, I'll take who do I want to say? Hell, you can even take Trae Young as an example. Like, was he flashy? Yeah, but was he like really good in his first 2 years? Kinda, not really. They just let him chuck up shots because there was nothing better to do. So you're watching him toil against literally LeBron James and Klay Thompson and guys like that. Versus in college, you get to watch them develop and be with and not be in that brutalist. Not as the WNBA is not as brutalist as the NBA, but just not be in such a pressure cooker that you got the flexibility to fail and still hang out and be around. It's in such a great place right now. So all that to say, this. I think thesis here. This draft is absolutely just that. It's one of the nexus points of where this league is gonna be. There's gonna be expansion in the next few years. Watching these games is gonna matter. All these games are on ESPN all summer long. You'll be able to watch Caitlin Clark on your normal TV cable package. It's totally fine. If you live in Atlanta, like I assume most of your listeners here do, we have the smallest arena in the WNBA. There's only like 2,500 to 3,000 people that can fit in there. So if you want your tickets, the Indiana Fever only come here twice to see Caitlin. So you're going to have to be on it. I don't know if they're going to relocate those games to State Farm. They should. They should just absolutely think about that. I mean, I'm sure the Gainbridge Fieldhouse, where the Fever and Pacers play last night, was very full just for the draft and very loud when she got drafted. It's kind of crazy how her and Wemby got drafted in back-to-back drafts. Like, these are the game-changing players in basketball, and they're here now. And it right at the tail end of other really that perfect generational shift is right here. It's in both the W and the normal NBA. It's really fascinating to see.
You heard him, y'all. Get your tickets early.
We have a great player in Ryan Howard. We have one of the best players. Yeah. Not to discount her, but the Atlanta Dream made the playoffs last year, and they should again this year. So,
cool. All right. Thanks, man. All righty. Big thank you to Mr. Jack Purdy for that discussion. I think it's really interesting, the analogy he used, comparing it, this most recent WNBA draft, to the 2003 men's NBA draft and where it might go from here for Miss Caitlin Clark and the entire WNBA league. The fourth topic for tonight, another name that I will horribly mispronounce, but something that I relate to as a former ultra marathon runner. This was another life ago. I haven't even run a marathon in a long time. I did run a half marathon last year just to see if I could still do it. I did it. It wasn't pretty. The running days are long gone.
Mine too.
Donna Urquhart, I think I have pronounced that right. I hope so. Apologies if I have not. So an ultra marathon. A marathon is 26.2 miles, half is 13.1. For the people who are a little bit more masochistic, you can go beyond 26.2. The furthest I ever did was 40 in one go, and that took me somewhere between 7 and 8 hours. That was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Up Lookout Mountain, down Lookout Mountain, back up Signal, back down Signal, Lookout Mountain, up and down these mountains all day long. That was brutal. That was nothing, it turns out, because this woman has run 871 miles over the course of 28 days, which is basically 31 miles a day. That would be enough, you would think. I ran my marathons in beautiful Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Charleston, South Carolina. She went to Antarctica. Sub-zero temperatures. Oh,
no.
Tropical storm force winds and 24 hours of daylight. Mind you, when you're running in Antarctica, there's not a Holiday Inn. You get done running your 31 miles for the day. She goes in the tent. Her and her husband did this. Brought their all your equipment comes with you. and he's helping support her. But my Lord, I've known some crazy ultra marathoners. I've known people who have done, 10 marathons in a row, or relay races where they do a 100-mile race. The Western States 100 is a brutal 100-mile race out west.
So you need to talk to my sister, Glenn, because she has done a couple of 100-milers and quite a few 50s. She's done
I don't need to talk to her.
She's done, I think,
I don't want anything to do with it.
Oh, she's done 140 marathons.
Okay, she's well beyond me.
Yeah.
Well beyond me.
I've done
super impressive
14 marathons.
I want to say I've probably done like 20 to 30, but that most of those are just when I would just go out for a run.
Right.
You know, and wasn't in an organized race back in the day when I was super fit. Those days are gone. And that's happily so. I don't need to.
I had a conversation with my sister about that, and I was like, hey, I don't want to run marathons anymore. The training, it's like I'd rather just hike or something.
The 3-5 miles is my sweet spot now, and I'm perfectly content with that. But she wanted a little bit more, so
that's and to do it in the cold too. I mean,
she went through, because she's from Australia. She found a company that allowed her to put a treadmill in a shipping container, right? And then pump super cold, freezing air into it to get her acclimated to those conditions. She partnered with another company who was at a wind tunnel, where they primarily work with cyclists, trying to get the draft just right and aerodynamics. She would just do marathons with 30-mile-an-hour freezing cold wind blowing in her face on a treadmill. Like, the training she went through. These conditions are
literally hell to me.
It's ridiculous what she has to go through, because it's freezing cold there. So you got to keep your body temperature up, right? Got to keep the wind off you, but you can't get too hot while you're running, because you sweat,
right?
And then your sweat is going to freeze. Like, there's so much you have to take into account. It's ridiculous. So she is the first woman to ever accomplish this feat. There has been a couple men who have done it miraculously. That blows my mind that anybody could do it. But she didn't just do it just to go out for kicks. You know, she did it obviously for charity. Mm-hmm. And, this was, what is the name of her charity? Run Antarctica, an effort launched to increase awareness for young women who find sporting environments stressful or intimidating. Right. And she set a target of raising $1.5 million Australian. It's just around $1 million. Dollars US. And she was recently interviewed on CNN, and she gave a quote that said, "Confidence is a real issue for females. Feeling self-conscious, body image issues, and a sporting environment provides a great opportunity to learn skills, not only physical skills, but mental and resilient skills as well. It was actually showing what females are capable of doing, and that we can push our limits and we can explore what's possible." Yeah, but you don't have to go run across Antarctica to do it. But she wanted to take that kind of, make that kind of extreme statement.
Yeah.
I wonder, I mean, marathoners are a special breed of people. It doesn't matter how well you train and how fit you are. It hurts. Doesn't matter. At some point, it just hurts. I'm wondering, I'm not in her head, but if she feels like, and I'm sure many women feel like they have to go to these extreme lengths to showcase themselves, to make a statement, as it were.
Sure.
To it can't just be a marathon. Because if she just ran this thing in Australia, whatever. She ran it in Antarctica. Like, you have to go to that next level just to get on equal footing.
Yeah.
Right?
So just another thing like that as well is that just happened, I guess maybe 2 weeks ago, maybe, was Jasmine Paris from England.
Oh, right.
40 years old, was the first woman ever to finish the Barkley Marathon, which is in Tennessee. It is 130 miles. You have to finish it in 60 hours, and she finished it with less than 100 seconds to spare. She's the only woman in the decades of this race happening. And this race is I mean, look it up. It's called the Barkley Marathon. It is absolutely insane. It goes through the woods. There's no markings. You have to find your way. It changes directions. It's five loops. It's
river nuts. Crossings. River the
crossings,
works.
Like briars.
Wildlife.
Crazy. Yeah. And all you're out it. There.
Yeah.
And the yeah. altitude for that race equals climbing up and down Mount Everest twice. And no woman has ever finished it. And she was the first woman to finish it. And this has been going on more than 10 years. This race has been over a decade. This race has been happening. So it was really awesome to see a woman finish it finally. You know, women have come close, but they've never finished it before. So it was really awesome.
I think women are built for endurance. Built to...
Well, we're endure. Definitely built to endure.
And built to endure, right? Just saying.
You know,
that's so incredible. Both these women are incredible.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah. I'll just shut up about my little 40-mile race. All right. Moving on. Number five. We've got some new rules finally taking effect this weekend in MLS because we'd been waiting because of the referee strike, not a strike. It was a lockout. Clear about that. But since they're back now, we're going to see three new rules take effect this weekend. And it's a shame that this didn't happen for the Philly match because Philly wouldn't know what to do with themselves, right. Being that their core strategy is to play soccer in 60-second increments. And they don't know what to do beyond that. So first rule is the off-field treatment. So what happens here? Player goes down. See it all the time. Maybe they're hurt. Maybe they're not. If they stay down, though, for more than 50 seconds, we are going to assume you are hurt and you require immediate treatment. Staff will come on the field, take a look at the player, take him off for 2 minutes. So if you're going down, Jim Curtin, if you're listening, you might want to just they'll run it right up to that 14-second mark, I'm sure. I think this is a good thing. If a player, I don't want to be rushed or anything, but if you're legitimately hurt, then you should come back on because we see that too often in sports, especially with concussions. I'm good. And they go back on and then they sit down 2 minutes later. It's like you were clearly not good. Take the time to really treat it. And if you're fine, get up. Something the women do more often than the men in the women's game.
It was so
hard tackle. And they
obvious Rebecca. That she believes like
totally. Is that not, was so that obvious. Glaringly different, glaringly different. Yeah. So I think that's a good thing. What do you think? You like it?
Yeah.
You don't like
it? I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, sometimes people rest a little too long and they're not as hurt as they tend to be. So
yeah.
I think it's good. And if you are hurt, come off 2 minutes, get assessed and see where you are. I think it's a good rule.
There are exceptions.
Yeah.
Head injuries, goalkeeper, obviously that would be wild. Just having an open goal for 2 minutes, serious medical events and fouls resulting in a yellow or a red. That is totally appropriate. If you got hard tackled and yellowed and you're injured, you shouldn't be penalized for that.
Right.
So I think that's good. Next up, we've got VAR announcements. I mean, MLB officials do it on challenges. Same thing with the NBA, NFL, obviously been doing it for years, but now we get in-game announcements. So fans aren't left in as much of the dark for why a decision was made. Obviously there's some that are easily recognizable. The ref points to the spot to penalty. But it'll be nice to know.
It's one of those things where the ref comes out and says, da 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 da. You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We get to hear all these people.
It's like on the NFL when they're like.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, the refs in the NFL are essentially line dancers. I love watching them. We saw this a little bit in the Women's World Cup in Australia.
Yeah.
There's going to be some awkward moments for sure. You know, it's the first time that these refs are having to get on the mic. That's going to be interesting.
Check one, but, two, one, two.
Yeah, but I think it's a good thing. And more information, more clarity for the fans, the better. The last rule is the time substitution rule. Another going against the Philly strategy. So substitutions, you got to get off the field within 10 seconds. Your number shown on the board. No more of this slow walking out, shaking everyone's hands, clapping off the fans, you know, just shithousery, taking as much time as you can. You got 10 seconds to get off, or the player being subbed in has to wait a full minute. And that could be really consequential, especially, you know, if it's a tight game, 1-1, stoppage time, whatever, and you're trying to kill a little time, and that tactic no longer works for killing time. I just don't know what Philly's going to do. Two of these three rules are go directly against their whole philosophy of just waste.
They're going to have people just hanging out on the sidelines. They're going to be three men down on the sidelines waiting.
It's going to be interesting.
Two injuries and a sub.
It's going to be interesting. All this stuff was tried, tested in MLS Next Pro last year. Yeah. And pretty good results. It says here on MLS's website that as far as the substitution rule goes, that actually 99.7% of the more than 3,200 substitutions that were made were completed in 10 seconds or less. So that 0.3%, that's Philly for sure. That's Philly Union too. I guarantee you it would not shock me in the least. Anything we can do to speed up the game, more of the game, I think is, a good
keeping
thing.
I'm all about keeping it moving. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I like to keep the, and I think the players, like the momentum stops, you know, and sometimes that's a strategy, right? If someone is having a really great game, like one side is having a really great game and the other side's like, we got to kill this momentum. Let's do something. So
maybe just be better with the ball and don't look for these stupid little moments to break up play, Philly.
Yeah.
The only drawback I could possibly see that I'm envisioning if I'm a player with a 15-second injury one, if I get tackled and I think I'm hurt, but I don't want to go out for 2 minutes and I kind of just need like 20, 30 seconds to catch my breath and, you know, maybe someone is hurt, but they don't want to come off because they know it's going to be 2 minutes. Like, I hope that players still take care of themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And aren't so worried about that 2 minutes. Like if you're hurt, you're hurt. You should come off.
I would hope that would happen because they know the consequences. If they are actually hurt, they could be out for 6 weeks and not 2 minutes.
It's just, you know, but you're in the game, adrenaline's pumping.
Yeah.
How many times have we seen, I mean, we saw this at the end of last year when Jamal Thierry had his concussion and he was desperately trying to get back on the field after that. And fortunately, the staff and the neutral doctor, which is very important, said, no, you're not doing that. Yeah. That's been one of the best things to be added to sports in general. Have a neutral venue doctor there that's not part of either team, that has no dog in this fight.
Absolutely.
That will just look at the player and be concerned about the player, and that's it. And they get the final say. That's how it should be. Because I get it. You're in the moment and you don't want to let your team down. And maybe you're like Jamal, where you're a substitute and you're not seeing a lot of minutes. And you're trying to take your moment and you're thinking about future contracts, all this stuff going through your head a million miles an hour. The last thing you're thinking about is, am I okay?
Yeah.
Have somebody there who's not thinking about any of that. And just looking at you and saying, are you okay? Anyhow. Yeah. All right. I think that about wraps it up. Appreciate everybody listening. We will be back this weekend for Skyline Chili Derby. Five takes. Ugh. I don't know how people eat this. I don't know who in their right mind came up with the idea. You know what? Let's do some wet spaghetti and let's throw some chili on top of it and call it done. And got approved for that. Bless your heart. We'll get to see Miles back here. I think he should be starting. I don't think he's injured. He'll at least should be traveling with the team. I hope he gets a decent ovation.
I hope we don't do the booing. Yeah, I don't think anybody would boo him. I mean, I know some people were in their feelings about it when he left, but I mean, I think he'll get a big.
I hope so.
I think he'll get a nice welcome. I think Gigi is going to hopefully. Gigi trained.
He did
one day, and then he was off day, but that's normal. So hopefully. What are we on now? We're Wednesday.
Yeah.
Even if he comes in, you know, for 30 minutes or something.
Give me 30 minutes.
Give me 30 minutes.
Give me 30 minutes and a goal, and all will be well. I did hear a story, and maybe we'll cover this next week on a five-a-side, depending on where it goes, that there is a Greek national player that his name has not been mentioned, but is undergoing possibly an investigation for doping allegations from the previous international window, which was most recently. Please don't let that be Gigi. They haven't said what player, who it is, but we might be covering that next week.
Let me tell you right now, that is not happening. I'm putting that in the universe because that cannot happen.
Crushing. It would be crushing. So like Angel said, we will not be talking about that next week because it's not going to happen. All right, y'all. We will be back in a few days. We will talk to you then.